You wanna know how much dues must you pay? Well,
Eric Bibb, with Shine On, folk singer Eric Bibb, with this number which appears on his 2010 album, Eric Bibb in 50 Songs. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And I'm laughing because we have an inside joke. We thought something was fixed, and then boom, it says, no, it isn't quite, but we are going on to do what we have to do. Today, I'm going to ask you to put on your thinking caps, because we'll be talking about things from an analytical point of view, and we just have to take a moment. It's always important to do that. You have to take a moment and assess what it is that's happening and how it is affecting you. We're not normally aware. We're not carrying this around with us consciously, the way we feel about things, but it's there. And it demands that you give it voice. And when we deny that, we find ourselves getting, for no reason, we get angrier, we get frustrated, we get feelings of abandonment. What the heck is going on? Who's going? Who's taking care of business here? You know, what is happening? And that's a kind of mood that I sense we're in. We share that kind of feeling right about now. So many things are happening, and so many things that are happening are so out of order. And I know it sounds like a very, very ultra-conservative point of view to say things are out of order, but really, we want some kind of order in our lives. And especially when we don't see it in our governmental apparatus, and we don't get a sense that the systems that we rely upon to give us a sense of order are themselves out of order. And it creates intense frustration and anger and displacement, psychological displacement. We don't know where to place ourselves. We're angry, but we don't quite know why. But I have a feeling that in the situation that we're in right now, the anger, we know where it's coming from and why we have it. We just don't know what to do with it. But at least let's begin the process of taking a deeper look at this anger that we have, find out where it's coming from, and how we manage it, if it is at all manageable. So we start off with your calls today, 888-874-4888. I have a number of questions that are awaiting your responses and your analysis. And I do want you to try to be analytical today. Of course, you will not be able to avoid giving us your personal opinion, because that's what's required. But we want you to look at the larger picture as well. How are you situated within the big picture? How do you think you're situated within the big picture? And what is that picture? So I'll await the first few calls coming in, and then we get started right away. 888-874-4888. 4888. 888-874-4888. As we go along with this exercise, you'll get it, where we're headed with this. There's no right or wrong. I will be, of course, challenging some of your answers, but only to get you more close to the epicenter of what it is you're feeling, and to help if help is needed. We'll do that, but we need to take a little time out here. Things are moving very, very fast, and not necessarily in a good direction. We need to pause, not freak out, but pause and take a sober assessment of what it is that we're living with, what are we dealing with, and as it is, can we deal with it? That's what we're trying to get. All right, so we start with Ed from Queens. Hi, Ed.
Good afternoon, Teresa. How are you?
Okay, so I'll arbitrarily pick a question for you. I know you can handle it. I'm interested in how you, if you add a little bit more to what you usually do, becoming a little bit more introspective this time, what are we likely to learn from you today?
Well, I mean, hello?
You up for it?
Hello, can you hear me? Yeah, how you doing? Can
yes.
you hear me now?
Okay.
I feel I lost.
Yes, I can hear you. All right, so Ed, as you assess the current social, political, and economic situation in the United States, what concerns you most and why?
Well, my primary concern is the future of labor in this country. We're going through what is a paradigm shift in our social and economic life. I personally believe this is the meltdown of capitalism. I think capitalism on a whole was never perfect, and deals were made by people, by myself on a personal level, by governments and society on a global and national level to accommodate this capitalist system, and we're seeing the error of our ways. And now we're going to be faced with a choice as to can we continue like this and sacrifice lives, or are we going to just bite the bullet and destroy the system? Like I've said on your show constantly, and I've said to other people, this system is broken and it needs to go. I'm a mechanic by trade. And there comes a point in time with any type of mechanical system, be it automotive, electrical, pneumatic, that it can't be serviced anymore. The parts wear out. The way energy is transferred in it due to corrosion and rust and time, it can't cope anymore. And you've got to replace it. And it's going to be hard because we've got a lot of work to do, and it's not going to be any immediate results. There's not going to be any quick fixes. But we're going to have to bite the bullet, or we're going to continue down a road where there's not going to be much of a planet left for anybody on any scale. That's my major concern. Is this the wake-up call that I've been hoping for since I became politically aware back in my early 20s when I was in the service and I started to see, my opinion, what this world and what this country specifically and what this world in general is about? And is this the wake-up call that society needs? I hope so, but that remains to be seen.
How widespread do you think your opinion that you just offered, that is quite impressive, how widespread do you think it is?
I think it's growing. I think education is growing. I mean, the wonderful thing about this generation is the computer and the internet and the access to information and the ability to ascertain information. I believe the younger generation has a lot better, has a lot more ability to digest information and ferret out what's real and what's not. I mean, like I said, education is the key. Like Kwame Ture said, educate and agitate, agitate, agitate. And it's starting to happen. There are small pockets of resistance that are developing all over the country, good and bad. And we've got to get back to where we could eliminate emotion and take a clear clinical look at what needs to be done. Hold the people that are accountable, and there are a number of people that are accountable for this failed state situation we have with this virus. The deaths of people from March until now, I personally hold this administration and the people in this administration accountable for them, and it should be brought up against criminal charges. I mean, we've got to cut all of this politics of personality out and just look at the cold, hard facts. We've got a group of people in control of this country that have no idea what is going on, that have no contact with the common person, with the working person, and they don't care. And they need to be taken out one way or another.
Wow. Thank you, Ed, for getting us started today. Some very profound thoughts you have, and I'm glad that you shared them with us this afternoon, I should say. Thanks so much for calling in. Okay. We're going to go next to Ethan of Brooklyn. Hello, Ethan.
Greetings, Ms. Retrieves. How are you? Good to hear you.
Okay. I'm all right. How are you doing today?
I'm talking to you, so I'm feeling all right, so I'm okay. Things are good from that perspective.
All right, let me ask you the same question. As you assess the current social, political, and economic situation in the United States, what concerns you the most?
What concerns me the most is what concerns me the most is the system is broken. It's been broken, and this particular event seems to have given a real window for those who didn't think it was broken to see how broken it is. But broken is a relatively perspective view. Like, I could say that the people who control the system don't think it's broken at all, right? They are orchestrating maneuvers that satisfy their greed so that they can continue to absorb and suck up all the money in the room and leave everybody else with nothing and turn this place into classic capitalist, we own, you slave for us type of scenario. You know, we understanding that, you know, the middle class as a 20th century experiment was not an experiment that anybody who owned controlled resources was really interested in. So we've seen a march away from any little bit of sharing that could have occurred to something towards the masses being slaves for a few. And in doing so, they make the masses see the enemy in someone who doesn't look like them and have them pointing fingers at each other and not paying attention to really where the damage is coming from. So, and it's just becoming more exacerbated, and you can see how people are, you know, starting to, but it's just becoming more apparent how this thing is going to turn into individuals fighting each other, very clannish type of behavior. And that's what concerns me too. That's how I see it. I'm hoping that people we'll start to have conversations, understanding that we have more in common than we do in difference, and that we really want the same things. We want to just be able to live and have families and have a little, you know, piece of, have some peace before you leave this earth and just have a little something and go. But, you know, we don't have to fight over the crumbs, but that's what we're being forced to do. We're being forced to fight over crumbs.
So let me ask you, Ethan, at what point would you say you were or have been part of the problem?
That I've been part of the problem?
Mm-hmm.
I guess I've been part of the problem since I have yet to effectively organize to put some muscle behind something or some to build a spoke in the wheel to trying to get this thing turned around. It's funny as you say that. I had a conversation today with a buddy of mine about doing just that thing. So, I've felt this way for many years, and sometimes you try to, you know, sometimes you try to back off of it, because when you start to think about what can I do to help, why do I, you know, what can we do? How do we turn this thing around? Part of me goes to, what you're really thinking of in your mind is a utopia. Right, the end result of what you'd like to see is a utopia, right? Where, and so if I think that way about it, I'm like, well, then you can't get to utopia, can you? And so then now, so what are you going to do, right? If the end result is a utopia, and utopia is not achievable, if that's then what? Because as long as there's more than one person around, there's going to be this difference of opinion. The question is, how do we negotiate the differences of opinion? So my spoke in the wheel is to see if we can generate conversations where we can bring the different camps and the different tribes to sit and meet and to reason regarding the things that we feel we want to have in common. You know, we both want to, and then see if we can't figure out a path to creating the things that we want to have in common for each other, as opposed to starting from the place of, I'm a Republican, I'm a Democrat, this, that, the other. No, that's not important. What's important is, what do we want? How do we want to live? And our first conversation, that I want to throw out to this what we call mass debate, is, are you your brother's keeper, or are you a survivor of the fittest? Which one of those do you prefer? And see if we can have some discussions that push this debate one way or the other, and see what is it worth to be one or the other, and how does it work for us as a whole. So that's what I'd like to do. I'm working on building that so we can start this conversation, so we can probably get people out of those camps, of those mindsets, and get to a place where we can do some common consensus building, and then take it out, and hopefully take it out of the hands of the people who have been in the hands of the pockets of those who run stuff, and put it back in the hands of the people, because there's more of us than there is of them.
All right. I thank you very much for your contribution. Well thought out. Thank you. We go next to Tony from Orlando. Hello, Tony.
Hi, Trees. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, thank you for calling. So here's your question. Just 6 months from the national election, and with Bernie Sanders quitting the race, are we back to the old Democrats versus Republicans formula, in which case, where will independents go?
Wow. that's a really hard question. I mean, as far as the first
part of
the question.
You can handle it.
I mean, the first part of the question, yes, I agree. I mean, it goes back to the same rigmarole. Now, as far as independence, I think there's no way to go.
There's nowhere to go.
I mean, I think independence, like, because I consider myself as an independent. For instance, this past election, we had the Democrat primary here in Florida right before the shutdown, and I didn't participate. So that tells you where I went.
Does it bother you that, as you said, there's nowhere to go? You don't see that there's some place where a large segment of people would have a reasonably good choice to make?
Yeah, I mean, it bothers me, but, I mean, to be honest with you, I'm so insignificant that there's really not much I can do about it in the whole scheme of things. As we all know, all we can really do.
Are you surprised that you have come to this position? Or it has come to this?
I'm going to tell you something. You see, listening to your show has enlightened me a lot. I've come to.
Thank you.
I mean, I've had, you know, my doubts, but I mean, I mean, honestly, all I know now to do is to just prepare for that storm, and we're in the middle of that storm, but it's going to get worse because I don't know if you allow me to answer your first question you asked. Was what's my
sure.
biggest fear? My biggest fear is what's to come is the expansion of automation. And Andrew Yang warned us about this during the primaries, but we weren't there yet. We couldn't see what was to come. And what we're going through right now, this is going to give more reason for large corporations to reduce their staff because humans are unreliable. We get sick. And they're going to replace us with technology, automation, things like that, because they want to produce. They want to make more money, and we're getting in their way. So we have to prepare when that time comes. And that's my biggest fear, that we're not going to be prepared for when that time comes. Because most Americans, we live day to day, check by check. So these type of disruptions is causing a big disruption in our lives. And like I said, most Americans are not prepared for this. But through your show, telling people, hey, you got to prepare, you got to be careful, you can't trust this government, they're not going to have your back. You got to prepare people because the storm is... The eye of the storm. We're in the middle of it right now. So, you know, this is the first half of the storm. The second half, as every downturn in these in the past, you know, decades, every time we come out of these recessions, what happens is the richer gets richer and the poor gets poorer. So if you thought it was bad last time around, it's going to get even worse now due to the fact that technology has advanced so far. That's why you see companies like Microsoft making big bucks during a time where we haven't seen it this bad in our lifetime. But yet these companies are making a lot of money. Why? Because of technology. They're replacing the human experience. So we got to be prepared for what's to come because it's going to get worse.
That's a pretty dire warning, but I hear you. I hear you. And
I mean, you have,
we'll follow that thread as we go because we have to. I agree with you. I agree with you that very, very tough times are ahead. And the downside is, as you said, I don't think we're prepared for it.
No,
I don't think we're ready.
We're not. And like, just for one little example of what I'm talking about, you had in the past recession, okay, we had a whole bunch of jobs created, which were what they called the gig economy. These were jobs that were like jobs like Uber, things like that. Okay, these weren't high-paying jobs. These were people scraping together, getting by. You know, you get in debt, you buy yourself a car in debt, and you try to pay it off. You know, with a little bit of money that Uber siphons down to you. So, for instance, that was what they called the gig economy, the new crappy job. Okay, well, guess what? Uber and Lyft and all these companies, they're going to go automated. GM, these companies are going full steam ahead with electric vehicles and autonomous vehicles. That's going to eliminate that whole gig economy when it comes to Lyft and Uber, okay? And those jobs are going to get eliminated. Same thing with the restaurant business. They're going to go fully automated. Same thing with the supermarkets, fully automated. So it's going to get a lot worse.
Thank you, Tony, for calling in and for offering your insights. I hope people are paying attention because there's a lot in what you offered today. Thank you. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Utrice.
Hello.
I want to approach your question and give my analysis of what's going on. My feeling is that the people that inhabit this country, most of the people, do not understand the system that they're living in. When the founders of the country, those slave owners who wrote the Constitution and planned for the empire they were building on the basis of ethnic cleansing and genocide of the indigenous people, and when they instituted the capitalism of slave labor that created their wealth and whatnot, they decided that they would continue this in its different stages. It got to the point where they ended the type of capitalism that they had with maintaining plantations and so forth. And what they did is moved on to the point where they have people now where their goal is to keep people completely ignorant. And they're doing such a good job at it. And they have nearly approached the Everest of capitalism in this country. So the goal of capitalism is quite simple: to make as much profit as possible at the expense of the people who do the work, and grabbing all the resources that they can grab that are natural resources. So people don't understand because those who rule control the so-called education, and as I said before, most of it is not education, it's training. Education involves knowing something about it to the extent where you empower yourself. When you just train people, you train them to do and think the way you want them to think. So in this country, you have that 1% who controls the schools and give out the training, who control the media and put what they want into the media, into the people's heads, and who instituted after the Bacon Rebellion in the 1600s the concept of white supremacy and how to divide and rule the people. So if you don't understand that, you are suffering because you don't understand the system that you live in. Now, your question about political parties, as I've said before, I don't know if people understand what I'm saying, but you've got only one party because their goals are the same, their mission. Their mission is to serve the interests of that 1% who run all aspects of the government, whether you're talking about legislative, judicial, executive. So, and people don't get it. So they're entertained with all the sports that go on and holidays and so forth. You keep the people busy, you keep their attention away from things, and you get to the point where three people, as has been said before, have as much wealth as half the people in the country. People are sick. They get rich off of people being sick by giving them bad foods. And the point is that people have to understand what's happening to them. So you're voting for a Republican or a Democrat. You're voting for the same people who have the same goal in mind. These smaller political parties, the ruling class has been very successful in defanging any kind of other party with a host of laws by state that make it very difficult for any other so-called party to be viable. And, you know, so people have very little ways to go in terms of what to do. They can either decide to not vote, or they can maybe vote for one of these parties or write in something. But people have to understand that this place is not for the benefit of the people, of the masses of people, but for the benefit of the small ruling class of less than 1% that run the country. So that is my analysis of things, people need to get it. And one of the most important parts of this is what I said about the invention of the white supremacy racism that was invented after the Bacon's Rebellion. People ought to really study up on that. That was one of the major things that was introduced to divide people up. So they've been very good at that, and they divide people up by gender, male versus female, young versus old, so-called white versus black, all this invented stuff that taxonomy they're using doesn't make a bit of sense, because we're all talking about the same people. Everyone comes from Africa. So, but the ruling class has been very successful in using all these techniques that they have to get people to the point where they cannot organize, even though they're in the majority, to defeat those who rule. And that's the problem that we have.
Well, thank you. I am telling you, I'm listening, and I am getting, just by listening, a great education. I hope it is happening for many, many others who are listening right now. Thank you. Thanks, David. All right, we move on to E from Edgewater. Hello, E.
Hello, Utrice.
How you doing?
I'm, hanging in there.
All right, that's good. What is your formula for making it through these challenging times?
Well, before I get to that, I just wanted to thank Willie. On Friday, he had some kind words for me. I thank him very much. He has a wonderful heart, Mr. Willie from Brooklyn.
Yes.
That's your question.
What is your formula for making it through these challenging times?
Unfortunately, I don't have a formula. I've been living pretty much trying to live as sparsely as possible. You know, trying not to, trying even to get to one meal a day, one meal every 2 days, learning to live without having to eat too much. You know, my main concern is water, fresh water to drink. Things like that have been my main concerns in life. I know where we stand with this system. And, you know, people just aren't getting it through their heads that we've been placated for the last 2,000 years, probably longer than that. And now they're reaching that point. I think Tony from Orlando brought up the point about automation, how jobs are going away. This has been the plan, and people aren't getting it. They're not waking up to the fact of what's really taking place here. You know, because they've done such a wonderful job, as David from Brooklyn explains. Everything is going exactly according to their plans. And we're talking about people that are in control, the system that controls this political system, these Nancy Pelosi's and Chuck Schumer's and Donald Trump's. They're all working for the system, and they're saying and doing whatever they have to do to accomplish their goal, which is to have supremacy over all of us. You know, it's a very difficult time that we're in, and this is why they're so blatant about it, I feel, because they've reached the point of technology now where we're no longer that important to them anymore. At one time, we were very important.
Let me ask you, how do you derive more power and more control with your approach? What is it that you're doing that puts you more in control of yourself and your world?
Well, I guess it's like you're born into the world, and your parents pretty much are in control of your life for your first 18 years at least. And then you go on and take care of yourself. And it doesn't require a president or vice president or any of these politicians to do anything for us, because we got to do everything for ourselves. And we should start to understand that and take credit for what we've been able to accomplish to survive this long when you're dealing with basically monsters. Basically creatures that only care about themselves and how much money they can amass in their lifetime. And that's all their main concern is. You know, their god is money. And everybody that lives in this system that are good people, their god is a real god, and they don't care about money as much. So you have to learn to live the way you want to live that's important to your values and things, and then you live your life. No matter what's going on the outside, really doesn't have to concern you and your small circle of friends.
But is it enough, though, to get you through?
It has to be enough, because there's nothing else. What is going on right now? They don't call it martial law, but I mean, how come we're not hearing anything about the military? They live in barracks, like 50 people in each barrack. I'm not hearing anything about virus in the military. We have military bases in every country in the world and in every state in the United States. So what about the military? We're not hearing nothing. We're not hearing the real story, and we're being told lies, and we're believing in them, and that's the scary part. So what can you do, Utrice? If you're aware enough, if you're a progressive person, and you're conscious, and you know what's really going on, you know, I think many times, should I sell everything, get a van, load it up with survival stuff and go out there into the wilderness? I don't know. That seems like the only option. a scary thought.
It is. It's scary that that's where you think is the logical next place to go.
Well, do you have another option that I could like consider?
I am not making recommendations. I'm asking you from your vantage point, what do you see? And what do you think we should do? Some ideas. How do we continue to survive? And you've given us some, but it's scary.
Yeah. I'm sorry about that. And I just don't have enough time to really like come up with a viable plan to go against what we're up against here. People talk about grassroots stuff, and that was 70s talk. I mean, this is a whole new ball game. This is something we never had to deal with before, and it's only because they don't need us anymore. And once we have that fact in our mind, that that's what's really going on, then you have to, survive just like if it was one of these science fiction movies and some aliens came down here and they're trying to get into your house. You're going to fight to your last breath, right? You're just going to fight the best you can fight. You got to fight the best you can fight. And if you can't find a group of people that want to come along to do it with you, then you got to do it yourself. And that's the most important thing. Survive as long as you can possibly survive. Do whatever you have to do. If I have to live out in the back of my backyard in my house here in the canal with the raccoons, I'll figure out a way to do it, But they're not going to take me until I reach that point, my last breath. That's when they're going to take me. They're not going to take my mind and fill it with lies and deceptions. So they can have lots of money and have a good time and try to extend their lives while they're trying to shorten ours. And, it's like aliens have landed and they're doing this to us. But only it's our own fellow human beings that used to be human beings but are now nothing but monsters and creatures.
Wow. You paint a pretty dire picture. But somehow I understand exactly how you're seeing the world, how you're seeing things, and there's a certain logic to it. Thanks, Eve, for calling in today. Al from New York, you're on the air.
Yeah. Well,
all right, so I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
And I'm interested in the answer that you give us today. On a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the highest rating, where do you place President Trump as a leader and his handling of the coronavirus and related national emergencies?
I would have to place him at about a 4 or a 5. That's where I would place him.
Okay, could you tell us why you would place him that low?
Well, the thing is that obviously there was a delay factor in responding to the outbreak, and he immediately began his normal routine and calling it a Democratic hoax, and then that changed gears, and he started with other stories, and he kept basically trying to keep everybody off balance as to exactly what we were dealing with. And I think his reliance on Fauci has been too much. He should have basically demanded proof from whatever Fauci and the other medical groups are saying, not just take it at face value. As you all recall, remember that famous model that they called, was going to predict 2 million people were going to die. Nobody ever questioned that model. It's almost like, oh, that's an accurate model. And now they're coming with the new model that's going to be 160,000 people dead. Nobody questions the model. President Trump should question the model and say, we need to have other models run. This is, how are you basing this information on?
Well, people have major questions about whatever models he appears to be following.
Well, yeah.
Because they're so off compared to what other people are saying. There's a lot of disputing going on.
Correct. Yes. And that's it. The other, that's a good point that you bring up, that if anyone dares to question the model, well, you're probably going to get censored on YouTube, Twitter. The papers aren't going to run it. None of the stations are going to run it. And in fact, the doctors that have come forward questioning things are now, you know, they quickly took that off the YouTube and Facebook. So it's not like it's a dialogue. There's no dialogue here. So based on what I've seen, you know, he's trying to, you know, his problem is he wants to get reelected. And his biggest mistake, in my opinion, is that he didn't let Pence drive the whole issue of the coronavirus. You put him as a czar and let him be the face of the czar, and let him face the nation as the person who is responding to the coronavirus pandemic. This way, he's one step removed from the arrows. But right now, since his personality is, he has to take control. He is now the focal point, and all the arrows are going to him. So from a political standpoint, he shot himself in the foot. So, but one of the things that I haven't heard anybody anywhere talk about is, what I keep hearing is this. Everyone is saying that it's going to be a new normal. Things are going to be different. And I'm saying to myself, well, how are they going to be different? And what is the new normal? And who is saying that? We need to push that. If politicians come up and make a statement that things are going to be different, we, the citizens, need to say, could you explain exactly how it's going to be different? We need to do that now before the plans are put in place.
I agree. Thank you for calling in and contributing today. Sasha from Los Angeles, you're on the air.
Hi there.
Hello.
Hi. Boy, I get so many ideas here, and I should probably try to make an outline of the things I want to talk about. But you know.
So let me give you a question then. Maybe that would help.
Go ahead.
Have the events of the past year changed your own political outlook from observer to involved activist?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I've been an activist for a long time. I just had my 60th birthday about 3 months ago. And,
well, good for you.
You know, I've been listening in the last, well, I've been listening to Pacifica. I found out about Pacifica Radio like 33 years ago, 1987. So I've been an avid listener almost the entire time, except for about 3 years when I was living in Hawaii in the early 90s. But I have been an activist since I was about 17 years old. And I probably too addicted to media and inputting information, and to the point of like it almost disables me, and then I have to withdraw, and then I don't do anything, but I still listen to media, and so it kind of has a paralyzing effect if you go as far into it as I have. But I just want to encourage people. You know, I love listening to your show. I try not to miss it. And Gary Moll, I listen to you just probably 4 days a week, maybe sometimes 5 days a week. But I just want to encourage people, if you have time, you know, now I have the luxury of not having to work for the last few weeks And so I, you know, even though when I'm working, I try to spend a lot of time listening as much as I can. When I'm not working, I'm just like, I have like two media sources going on, audio, and then I have the TV going on with low, so I can just kind of barely hear what the topic is, but I don't listen to every word. But I try to monitor things, and I jump around and, you know, flip around. If there's a commercial on TV, I, you know, I'll just shut it, you know, just mute it completely. And I just encourage people to, you know, if they're listening via PRN to your show, I hope that some of the listeners will look at, you know, some of the other programs, like there being over 100 different programs every week on PRN alone. Nobody can listen to all, every single program, but I would say if you have time, if you're not working and you like to listen to things, if you're not listening to at least three different programs every day that are on PRN, you know, that would be like 20 hours a week. That's a lot of time, but to get the diversity of perspectives is important. And, you know, I just wonder if you listen yourself, Eutrice, if you listen like to Gary Noll, or I'm sure you're busy preparing for your own show because you're both live, but do you hear the topics of conversation that are on preceding your shows, or do you ever listen to his archives after the rest of the time in the day?
Well, actually, I prepare my programs in the dead of night.
Okay.
So my programs are generally sent in, you know, I send my run sheet in by 2-3 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
Although my show is at 1 in the afternoon. And very often, you know, I find that there are major developments that need to be addressed, so I make the adjustment. But I like to work in the dead of night because it is quiet, and I love quiet. But you haven't answered the question, and I'm curious about it. Have the events of the past year changed your political outlook, and if so, in what way?
Well, I've felt it's been a dire situation since before Trump was ever elected. He wasn't elected, but since he was put into office, since he floated into office through all the means that got him there. And I didn't vote for him, and I didn't vote for the Democrats. I vote Green since I've been a Green for 30 years. And I voted for Bernie in the primary in 2016, and Bernie he won apparently every county in California in this primary. And yet that doesn't count, because I guess California doesn't count according to the guy in the White House and the other powers that seem to be running the show. So I've always felt the logical choice was to go, you know, to break out into a third party. If you could vote, I'm not saying who anyone should vote for, but if you want to make a difference, don't let the Democrats take you for granted by being registered as a Democrat. If you want to vote in the Democratic primary, you have to re-register as a Democrat temporarily, but either be independent or be in a third party. Certainly, I would never recommend anybody get into the Republican Party unless there's some compelling reason that people think that could be reformed. But I'm not interested in doing any such thing. But I'm just saying, don't let the Democrats take you for granted, because if you know they have like 50 million people registered in their party, then they can say, well, look, we have like, you know, this major party that, you know, we can count on, and we can always ask for money. And if 50 million people just said, that's it, hang it up, we're not ever being in this party again, we're going to just be, you know, standing in a third party, that would make all the difference in the world on the playing field anyway. And I still believe that. And also, just like, I'm not a fan of, I hope that answers your question somewhat, but partly one of the things I wanted to say.
Yes, it does.
One of the other things I wanted to say is the social media is pretty important. And just like, I'm not like a regular watcher of The View on ABC, but I did switch on to it during this show, and I heard the topic of conversation. They're talking pretty disenchanted with the whole thing, with, you know, what's going on with Fauci. Some of them think, oh, we should hear what Fauci has to say. Trump shouldn't shut him up. But if you listen to Gary Null, what he's been, not just what Gary Null is saying, but the material that he's been presenting, the people who are on his show for every day, but especially this last couple of days and this last couple of weeks, I urge you, please listen, because he's been consistent for as long as I've been listening to him, for close to 40 years, over 35 years. And, you know, Fauci has been a bad actor on the scene for 40 years, since 1980. And he owns patents in pharmaceuticals and vaccines. He's a completely conflict of interest character. They're even brushing up against this, even on this mainstream ABC, The View. Now, if people get on social media, Twitter,
I'm so sorry, but we have run out of time.
Okay.
We will be continuing tomorrow.
Okay.
This is intended to get us rethinking our positions and what we're feeling, so that it would inform our actions. And we first have to think out loud. It's okay. Think out loud and express yourself, because we're doing a lot of teaching. As you're thinking, you're teaching. And this is very, very important. And at this time, it is even more important than we know, because we're up against some incredible opposition, and they're dedicated to winning at all costs. So I want to thank you for calling in and contributing. I want to thank you all for calling in and contributing. And we will continue the conversation. We need time to just take a pause, reassess what we believe, what we're working on, what we embrace, what we should encourage in our communities to happen. This is important. It's important. And we need not pay attention to the rhythm established by others. That's their thing. They know what they're doing. They're following their plan. But we have to do a lot of contemplating and thinking out loud, so that we can get ourselves together and get ready for some resistance. That's what we need to do. Thank you so much for listening today, and let's continue the conversation tomorrow. Bye-bye.